This is 16-9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16-9 has been online now for more than a decade, writing about the digital signage industry and filtering all the BS. Now 16-9 is also a podcast, a chance to talk to smart people doing interesting things in this business. You can listen to episodes online, grab it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to grab the RSS feed. 16-9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. This week's podcast is a little tough because I'm going to ask listeners to get their brains around something they really need to see and something that's just emerging from R&D, so you can't really see it. But it's more than worth listening to Daniel Sedin talk about Lightvert, a UK-based startup that has technology that creates huge digital billboards that only exist in your vision. The company has come up with a way to use something called persistence of vision to safely print an image directly on the retina of viewers, but only momentarily. Think of it this way. When you see something bright at night and then look away, that bright image is still there in your eyes for a heartbeat or two. So what if that was a logo? It uses narrow reflector strips mounted on the sides or corners of buildings and a thin, very high-powered laser beam to make it happen. Have a listen, as this guy does a way better job of explaining the hows and the whys of Lightvert. So, Daniel, let's start with what Lightvert is all about and how it works.
Sure. Lightvert is a digital outdoor media technology company. We're quite a young company. We've been going for about 2 years. And we're built around our first product. Our first product is called Echo, and it's a new type of outdoor display media. Echo is what's referred to as a persistence of vision display. And you and I'm sure many of your listeners may be very familiar with persistence of vision displays. Persistence of vision, or sometimes referred to as POV, if you do a hunt, it's the biological phenomenon in the human eye where when you look at any bright light and you look away from that bright light, you see a ghost of that image for just a moment. That's right. Persistence of vision. And what we do with Echo, and as any persistence of vision display does, is it uses that phenomenon to effectively print an image in your retina temporarily and safely. And so persistence of vision and persistence of vision displays, I should say, have been in the public domain for well over 20 years now. But what's different about us is how we generate the persistence of vision display. Up until now, people have been using, you know, traditional light sources and more recently, of course, LEDs. So a persistence of vision display would look like a single vertical line of LEDs. And that vertical line would blink in a particular fashion. And the reason it blinks or appears to be blinking is because it's taking the onboard computer takes a digital image and it breaks that image up into vertical columns of pixel data. And then that vertical line of LEDs blinks out each column sequentially. So column one, column two, column three, till it gets to the end of the image and then it starts over. So when you just look at the persistence of vision display, it just looks like a flickering line of light. Mm-hmm. But as your eyes look away to the left or to the right, the whole image gets reassembled in your retina for what appears to be about a tenth to a quarter of a second. So you get an apparition. You catch a glimpse of the image, and then the image disappears. It's an impression. Like I said, these things have been in the public domain for a long time and used in a number of different ways. So some people have used these persistence of vision displays where, and they do this on the Japanese underground, where the train takes you past these displays really quickly. And so it's a frame of reference thing. In this case, rather than your eye moving, your whole body is moving
right
past the display. And so the whole thing gets reassembled in your retina. The other way that you see it happening is, you know, they used to sell these really gimmicky clocks on the sharper image where a little wand waves back and forth and the time seems to appear in thin air in front of you. That's also a persistence of vision display. Now, what's different about Echo is how we generate it. What we do is we use a very high power, high speed, very specialist projection system in order to project light onto a reflective strip of material. And then that light bounces off that reflective strip and into the viewer's eye. Now, what this lets us do is really quite special. What it lets us do is scale up the size of a persistence of vision display massively. So with LEDs, it becomes quite challenging to make displays that are much bigger than, you know, 3, 5, 6 meters. It also becomes very expensive. Mm-hmm. But with our system, you know, we can go 20 meters, 30 meters, 50 meters, according to our numbers. And we haven't done it yet, of course, at this size. But according to our numbers, we feel that we should be able to do 200 meter tall displays. Mm-hmm. Now, I think you and your listeners can probably already see what the opportunity is there. You look at any major city, and all of a sudden, every single skyscraper becomes an opportunity for a persistence of vision display like ours, an Echo display. Mm-hmm. And so for the last couple of years, we've been working on securing our patent filings around this, and we've got that secured all over the world. And we've developed a number of proof of concept systems, generating images that are 25, 30 meters tall here in East London in the back of our building. And we've been building the business case around this new technology.
And what would you be installing on a skyscraper?
That's a good question. There's really two constituent components to what we do, what we install on the system. The first is the reflective strip. And that reflective strip, this is what's one of the things that's so cool. It's really only about 2 inches wide. Mm-hmm. And up to however tall we want it to be, you know, 20 meters, 50 meters, 100 meters. And so what's really interesting is this reflective strip can run between the windows on a building, which means that we're not significantly augmenting the exterior of the building. Mm-hmm. We're not covering windows, anything like that. So already building planning's permission barriers to entry are lower. So that's the first thing we install is this reflective strip. The second thing that we install is the projection system. And the projection system, it's a box, measures about a meter cubed, weighs about 100 kilos, and it sits on the same building, either directly below or directly above the reflective strip. Mm-hmm. And it sits cantilevered out from the reflective strip, no more than about 1.5 meters. So it's very low profile. And again, you know, compared to traditional screen media, we really change the nature of the challenge of installing this type of display technology versus traditional screen media, because we're not significantly augmenting the exterior of the building.
Right. So then this laser system is pointing a beam just up that reflective strip and just into that very narrow strip itself, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's physically gated. We've worked with a number of health and safety specialists in the early days of developing this technology, and we've gotten a really great response from them, that essentially there's no significant issues that can't be overcome. We also know that we're not going to have any significant issues with federal aviation or civil aviation authorities. And so it's a good little system. So far, we're speaking with a few of the different major agencies out there and looking at bringing this to market for early market testing next year.
And what would you see? Let's say if you did a 100 meter tall strip on the side of a building, what would be the sense for me when I looked at that strip and looked left or right? Would something unfurl in my field of vision that looked 50 meters wide, or I would sense it was 50 meters wide, or how would that all go?
Yeah, it's a lot like augmented reality. I think it's a good way, one way to describe to your listeners the experience of this, because essentially our display, it feels, the experience of it is that, yes, you see the image for a brief moment before it disappears, but you also recognize that you're seeing a digital image that's overlaid on the real world. And, you know, one of the powers of what we're doing, of course, is that you don't need a mobile device to capture that digital image, or a wearable device to capture that digital image. You just need your own eyes.
Right.
But of course, once you start to involve mobile or wearable devices, a whole lot of fun things can happen, but that's another story. So you capture this impression, and what we found, and we've recorded a whole lot of viewers' experiences when they see this for the first time, what happens is that people stop and they wonder if they just saw what they thought they saw. And the feeling they often describe, and I would agree, having, you know, obviously experienced it many times myself, is that it's a personal experience. You question whether you're the only one who saw what you just saw. Uh-huh. And then you pull your friends around and they see it too. And you can then capture it on your mobile phone using your, you know, your standard camera app, and then share it. And so that's one of the most fascinating things I think about what we're doing, is about viewer behaviors. We've all grown up around screens, and we've all grown up around, you know, standard format posters. And we all have a very well-known, well-understood behavior to those types of media displays. But what's interesting about Echo and the journey we're on with LightVert is that we're introducing a new media into the outdoor market. And this new media is going to create new viewer behaviors. And it, then the challenge really becomes about, well, how does the content integrate with these behaviors? How does the content really work to emphasize the characteristics of this media, or work to really maximize the value of the characteristics of this new media? And it's a really fascinating challenge, and one of those things that I just love to talk about with the creative agencies and the media agencies.
And because it's momentary, you're not doing storytelling with this. These are brand impressions that you're able to convey, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we really see this media as being a complementary media within the existing tapestry of media buys. So we don't ever expect that any one campaign will be run entirely on Echo displays. Mm-hmm. We expect Echo displays to emphasize campaign messages and to work in conjunction with standard media buys.
Right. And it's still images. It's, you're not able to do video or anything like that.
Well, yeah, we can show full motion video, but the viewer will only ever see one frame at a time.
Right.
And so there is quite a lot of opportunity that we can have in terms of telling stories by not only by showing video, but also by showing having multiple units in a certain vicinity, and by the relationship of the content on Echo units to the content on LED screens and print billboards.
Would there be a way that you could cascade an image or link an image between buildings to make a larger image?
Yeah, there absolutely is. We've done some small scale experiments with that on the sort of, you know, desktop scale experiments, mm-hmm. but not yet at building scale. And that's something we're really looking forward to doing.
And what about in the images I've seen, they're rectangles. Can you mask an image so that it would just be a round logo that sort of appears to be floating, as opposed to something that looks like an unfurled flag?
Yeah, we absolutely can. Yeah. I mean, we can really show any image. What's interesting about the nature of the content and the way that content works best with this media, we find that content that really works with this media, it's often best described as iconic content. Mm-hmm. So when you see an image for only a tenth to a quarter of a second, you don't have a lot of time to really dive into the detail cognitively. And so iconic content works very well. Now, then the question is, what is iconic? Well, logos are obviously iconic. Letters, short words are very iconic. Symbols, you know, in symbolic languages work very well, because there can be a lot of meaning packed into one symbol. But also images like the Mona Lisa, which are, you know, very complex images, are obviously also quite iconic. And you and I could see the Mona Lisa in 16 pixels by 16 pixels, and we'd still know it's the Mona Lisa.
Right.
So it's the definition and nature of iconic is one of the interesting conversations we're always having around this. And when you have, of course, if we ever have the benefit of being part of a massive global campaign with Echo technology, you could argue that a global campaign has the power to make anything iconic. You know, just look at a lot of the work that Coca-Cola has done.
Right. So I would imagine that with an iconic symbol like the London Underground, that you could have that atop an underground stop with an arrow pointing down, so people could know, okay, well, there's a stop over there.
Yeah. Civic messaging is a really awesome opportunity for this type of media. Cultural messaging. These are the kind of things that we actually really want to work hard to align ourselves with. Again, it's that interesting challenge of introducing a new media. And I'm sure you and a lot of your listeners have engaged with this in a number of different ways. It's how do you introduce this medium in the right light so that people recognize its core value? Mm-hmm. And that's the challenge that we're really tasked with over the next few years as we bring this to market. You know, our media conveys certain messages that standard LED screens and billboards don't so easily convey. You know, messages about, in a sense, you know, our media is very much like a tease. Inherently, it's a bit of a tease. It shows it to you and then takes it away. Our media is also very futuristic. So there are, you know, these are just a few of the core characteristics of many that we've outlined. And you can instantly start to see how certain campaigns, certain brands, certain messages can really make very active use of this kind of media.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 69 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now, back to the podcast.
Are you challenged at all by the color palette? Like, do you only support a certain number of colors?
We support thousands of colors. Our system is it's a four-color system. But the tuning of those colors, the color profile of our system is slightly different than that of LED screens and other screens. So this is one of the things that we're working to map out very accurately for our partners and our clients so that they can have a very clear understanding of that their content is going to be properly rendered.
Right. This is only something you would be able to see at night, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a nighttime only medium. And we've built that into our pricing model. So right off the bat, Echo Technologies will be costing about half of what you would expect standard Premiere screens to charge.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about costs. I realize, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, where your company's at, but if I were a media owner and I said to you today, okay, let's do this. I've got a large building. I want to put a 100-meter strip on there. How much? Ballpark. I realize it's early stage.
Ballpark. Well, we break our systems into two different types of systems. There's standard scale systems, which measure anywhere from 10 meters to 30 meters in height. And then there's hyperscale systems, which measure 30 meters and larger. And so we break all of our pricing into those two categories. With regards to cost to manufacture a unit, let's just talk about a hyperscale unit. To manufacture a hyperscale unit, to achieve the planning permissions, to install it on the side of a building, and to basically have it ready to come online, we're looking at around the 700,000-pound mark. Okay. And for standard scale units, we're looking at more around the 400,000-pound mark.
And for the average Joe, that would be a number that would give them a heart attack. But for media owners, that would probably make them shrug, I would imagine.
It's the impression we get. Yeah. I mean, so far, you know, having spoken to a number of the larger and smaller agencies, nobody is too concerned with these numbers. We think that we have a good starting point for our proposition. Everyone always, you know, we're always testing it with everyone we talk to who's in the industry, who knows anything about the industry. We're always testing it with them to see what their reaction is and hear their opinions. And we try to stay as close to the customer as possible throughout all of this. And everyone says, yeah, you know, it's a fine place to start, but got to build it. You got to build it. You got to install it on a building. You have to see what the market is going to do. And so we take all of it with a grain of salt. Right. We understand that our model right now is going to have to shift. We're going to have to roll with the punches. And we're going to just have to see what ultimately what the people think of it.
Right. And you mentioned the regulatory hurdles. How big of a challenge is this? Because I suspect people are going to hear lasers and freak out about that. And second, every municipal jurisdiction probably has different rules.
Yeah, they do. I mean, when you look at the regulatory challenges that we have to face for each installation we do, it's essentially three different challenges. There's a health and safety challenge. You know, is it going to burn out people's eyeballs? Of course it's not. There's the buildings planning permission challenge, and then there's the advertising planning permission challenge. And we have a number of very experienced people on our team and on our advisory board that have navigated these waters many times, so we have the benefit of that. But that being said, it's with regards to health and safety, we have really ticked that box. We've had this system reviewed by so many specialist health and safety specialists, particularly laser-based health and safety specialists, who say that under you know, the conditions we've described, where it's mounted at height on a building, they see no significant issues with regards to health and safety that can't be dealt with using any number of standard interlocks and health and safety systems. So we feel very good there. With regards to buildings planning permission, again, assuming we're not installing this in a conservation area like you have in London, and of which there are many, but there are also many areas that aren't, we don't see significant challenges to buildings planning permission. Certainly our challenges are less than that of a large LED screen, because we're not significantly augmenting the exterior of the building. With regards to advertising planning permissions, though, that's an interesting one. We're working with senior director from Cushman Wakefield, one of the world's largest commercial real estate asset managers. And he has a great deal of experience in obtaining planning permission for outdoor advertising. It's an understanding that from his experience and from speaking with planners here in London, which is widely considered to be one of the most challenging places to achieve advertising planning permission for a new installation, the law as it currently sits possibly does not know what to do with us, possibly does not even recognize our technology as being an advertisement. Because our technology, our hardware, is literally just a light. The actual image doesn't exist in reality. It only exists in your eye.
Yeah.
And so we have an opportunity, and we also have a challenge in that. We can't, of course, start, you know, selling cigarettes to two-year-olds because because we're this new medium. We'll be shooting ourselves in the foot there. We know that as a business, we need to ask the planning boards regionally and the policy advisors to travel with us. We need them to understand the technology, appreciate the technology, and ultimately, of course, we want them to want the technology. We believe that our medium, because of its nature, because it can be so large, because it can be in such high-value locations on premier buildings and cities, that it creates actually a high-value opportunity for a city in which it's installed. You know, it creates an opportunity for that city to really set its stall out in terms of its technological prowess, in terms of its, you know, differentiation, in terms of all sorts of things. And that's why we're really interested in aligning ourselves in large part with civic messaging and the arts and high value messaging propositions. Because ultimately, you know, if things go according to plan for Lightvert, we're going to be significantly augmenting the city skyline and in a positive way. And we believe that one of the best ways for us to do that is in a way that ultimately that people respect and appreciate. So by aligning ourselves with things like the arts and civic messaging and sports and, you know, cultural events, we can create a very high value proposition for viewers and for sponsors.
Right. And really in the last, I'd say 3 to 5 years, and particularly in the last couple of years, you've seen so many landmark buildings in so many cities take on LED lighting and start to create, you know, different thematic hues on the buildings themselves. So really the landscape is starting to be filled with kind of lighting strips anyways.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the future is, we're presenting a really interesting new technology that we believe will help to elevate the city skyline, help to elevate the city's branding and perception opportunities. And really, we're not talking in Lightvert's plan of world domination. We're not talking about installing tens of thousands of these all over the world. You know, we're talking about installing one or two hyperscale units in a major city and a handful or two standard scale units in a major city to really keep it as a premier offer and one that isn't really about saturating the market with echo messaging. It's really more about making it special.
So we're not going to see a Pico version of this outside of a 7-Eleven.
I hope not.
Well, there's scale there.
Yeah.
So let's talk about where on earth did this come from and where are you guys as a company right now? Because I know you're still in the fundraising stage.
Yeah, we are. We're definitely still in the early stage, still working to get out of the gates in a number of ways. I'm a designer and an engineer by training and profession. And a long time ago, I founded a business. About 10 years ago, I founded a design business here in London called Haberdashery. And we specialize in making light-based products, light-based technologies, light-based art installations. Over those 10 years working at Haberdashery, very early on, we started working with a very well-known lighting artist named Chris Levine. You may have seen a number of his works. He's done a couple of very, very well-known portraits of the Queen here in the UK. He also does some absolutely unbelievable laser-based installations and LED-based installations. Chris is a good friend of mine, and early on, we were helping him to design, engineer, and assemble his technical light sculptures. And many of those sculptures used LED-based persistence of vision displays. So for over 10 years, I've been working with LED-based persistence of vision displays and installing them in, you know, collectors' homes and galleries and retail spaces when he gets retail-based commissions. And many of the clients would ask us, can you make it bigger? Can you make it bigger? Can you go 4 meters, 5 meters, 10 meters? And the answer was always, yes, we can, but it's challenging. There are challenges to that. And so we never did installations that were much more than 3 meters in height. And Chris was, well, basically just had a brainwave one day. And he said, what if we used a laser to create the same effect? And he and I started talking about it. And we started to run some tests. And we found that our very early tests were working. And so then we instantly moved to start to protect the technology, which we've achieved through our patent filings around the world. And then we started building the next version and the next version, the next version. And we've done 5 different proof of concept systems now, and each one better than the last. And now we've completed all of our R&D, really, on the projection system. And the R&D is essentially complete. And now it's about raising our seed round funding to produce the first commercial unit and test it in the market next year. So right now, we are deep in the throes of working to raise £670,000 for a 21.8% equity in the business. And we're doing that both through private searches with angel investors and high net worth individuals, and then also through the ever-growing, more popular form of equity crowdfunding. I know that in the United States, I don't think there is an equity crowdfunding platform yet that has made it through USA regulations, but out here in Europe, there are a couple, Crowdcube and Cedars. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be working with one of these platforms in kicking off late January next year to close out seed round.
And I would imagine to do something like crowdfunding, you really have to have a good video and you really have to have an easily told story, because this is something you have to invest a little time into it to explain to people. They're not going to instantly get it.
Yeah, it is. It is a very visual thing. I realize that over the power of podcasting can only get us so far.
Yeah.
But all of your listeners, of course, they can go to lightvert.co.uk, spelled LIGHTVERT.co.uk, and click through to the main site, and you can see our video, which we put together just a couple months ago, which we think really helps explain not only the experience of seeing an Echo display, but also how it works. It's a little short, little 2-minute video. And of course, if your listeners are interested, they can register their contact details, and we will keep them abreast of all the latest developments with regards to the crowdfunding, which they can participate in, and also with regards to all of our future marketing works and when this technology comes to market. So if your listeners are in the industry, you know, they can also get in touch with us, and we can work together about bringing this to the market.
All right. I think that's a good way to close it.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. That was really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing one of these in real life.
Well, we'll definitely send you the invite for the next public demo.
All right. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.